evening. Welcome to minute 86 of season 7 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today, and hopefully all week, is Travis Bowe of Real Comics Heroes. Welcome back, Travis.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad that we were able to find time for you to be on this season.
Yeah, it almost didn't happen.
Well, you know, it's a good thing we're both a little flexible and we're able to accommodate one another for this. So that works.
That's right.
That
works. And really, isn't that what this movie is all about? Is people partnering up, you know, through adversity and challenges.
And terrorists. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Rob and I had to fight some terrorists to make this recording happen. So.
That's right. Well, again, I mean, then the debate can go on as to whether Simon is really a terrorist, just like Hans. You know, are they really terrorists? Mm. You know, if you look at it, I don't think that any of the villains in the first three movies could really be considered terrorists.
In this one, I think the people who die in the department store explosion would disagree
quite
with
possibly,
that.
Quite possibly. No, but well, Takagi,
you know,
Takagi
died.
Takagi would also disagree. I don't think Ellis would disagree because Ellis is just way too high.
Right.
You know, and I don't think he notices either way. So that doesn't really make a difference from that perspective. And the you know, Stewart and his men, I wouldn't classify them as terrorists. You know, they're more mercenaries at that point. Okay, so basically they're thieves to everyone except for the people they killed. There we go. The people they killed and maimed think they're terrorists, but we know that they're really thieves. Okay, that's a good way to look at it. All right, so minute 86 begins with John thinking of an idea and ends with a truck backing up at high speed. So why don't we first start off with you telling us a little bit of history with this movie?
Sure. I would have seen this on probably a VHS rental as soon as it became available, I'm guessing. I definitely didn't see this in theater. But my dad was a big fan of the Die Hard, you know, franchise. And so I think he was excited to see it. And so we rented it, you know, like I said, as soon as we could. And then we owned it. And this one was in high rotation in my house for several years after that.
Oh,
like,
wow.
We this is one that we could all, like, especially my dad and I, we could just sit and watch this one at any time. Probably because it's a little, I guess, more lighthearted than the first one. We never watched the second one. I think I talked about that last time. But this one we watched a lot. So, kind of grew up watching it. And, you know, like most of these, I haven't watched this in several years, but it's a very familiar old friend.
Well, I'm glad that I get to remind you of familiar old friends. You know, you're not my only guest who has that privilege rewatching these movies because I've chosen to do them. Mm. You know, so I like being the catalyst for those kind of things. You know, why not?
Yeah.
You know, to remind people of their love of these movies. Mm. You know, so why not? So this is actually one of the first minutes, not at the beginning of the movie, where there is no dialogue whatsoever. You know, we actually this week have 2 minutes with no dialogue.
Yeah.
But which is pretty rare for a Die Hard movie, because in the first two movies, if I remember correctly, there were no scenes with no dialogue. I mean, in the second one, there's dialogue within the first. Within the first minute of the movie,
when
his car is getting towed, and in the first one, maybe it takes like 2 or 3 minutes till there's dialogue. The first dialogue is with the making fists with your toes.
Sure,
that whole dialogue. But through the course of each of those movies, I don't recall there being any scenes where McClane was making some quip or something like that. You know, there might have been minimal. dialogue episodes, but there was nothing that was completely void of dialogue. And here we get two in a row. You know, both today and tomorrow we're gonna have a few grunts. You know, but no dialogue whatsoever there. So
interesting. That should have stood out to me, but I think I just didn't even think about there not being any dialogue in this one.
Okay, I mean that's fair.
Or the next one.
Because it's not as if it's a minute where nothing is happening. There's a lot happening. So you're not necessarily paying attention to the dialogue. I mean, one of the things that I've learned over these seven seasons of doing this is that there are a lot of scenes where there's small bits of dialogue which you don't even catch when you're normally watching it. But when you watch it this style, movies by minute, you know, minute by minute, and you're paying attention to the subtitles and paying attention to the script and everything like that, you catch lines here and there. I mean, we're going to have a few this week that are stuff that I never even heard because it was happening. It's happening in the midst of some sort of action scene or whatever it is. So, you know, that's why it stands out to me that these 2 minutes have no dialogue whatsoever.
Yeah. It's always like, I think when you have the script in front of you, and I don't know, I'm assuming you do have the script for this one.
Yes.
So yeah, when you get to those minutes and there's literally no dialogue for a chunk and you just have like exposition, like saying what's happening, then it is more obvious, you know, when you look at that script and see,
correct.
Oh, here's a chunk of movie that seems like it happens so fast in the script, but yeah.
Right. I mean, again, when we get to the script towards the end of today's episode, you'll see that there is dialogue in the script that they cut out.
Okay.
But it's something that to me stands out because it's, you know, when you watch this minute and as we're going through it, we'll realize it. There's something major that is just not shown.
Okay.
And, you know, that surprised me. Even though I've seen this movie so many times, when I was watching it now doing my research, I was like, wait a second. Where's that part of the scene that I always believed in my mind we actually do see?
Okay.
You know, but we'll get there. We'll get there. So with John, you know, driving through the aqueduct and reaching a point where he sees that he can't get across because there's a board that has fallen, which we talked about, I think it was last week or maybe it was a week before, how, you know, Miranda happened at the very last truck that was driving past, you know, before John.
Right.
You know, like.
I thought about that too, how coincidental, you know, that seems to be. And and this was
Klaus, maybe. I don't know what they would have done.
Like they would. Right. They would have had the same problem, you know, kind of thing that this should have been an intentional thing to prevent people from following. But clearly it's not, because we know that there were backup guys who would have been crossing this little trench. But so it does kind of feel coincidental, you know, that sort of
too,
like,
coincidental.
It
makes you wonder. So, makes you wonder what would have happened if Nils and Klaus had actually made it to there, and they would have called up Simon. Would they have actually? You know, would they have been scared to call Simon and say, you know, we need some guys to come here to help me out? Or would they say, all right, let's forget about the $13 million of $13 billion in the back of the truck and just move forward? I don't know.
Yeah.
We don't really know what Simon's relationship is with his men from that perspective. You know, who will put a gun to one of his guys and, you know, pull the trigger. I think Simon needs his men more because this is his little army, you know, from that perspective.
Yeah, it made me curious when John goes into this trench to try to lift this, you know, steel plate, and it's kind of a, you know, it's like obviously he's not going to make this thing budge, and then he gets the pipe, and it's like, well, maybe with some leverage he might be able to. And these steel plates are pretty common. You know, you see them in construction sites. You drive over them when you're driving over a bit of road construction where they'll lay these plates down just to cover, you know, a hole that they've dug or whatever, a temporary situation.
Which hopefully won't fall as the, sure. you're driving past them.
Yeah, you'd think that it wouldn't be like sitting out 2 inches, you know, on the edge of this trench like it is here, but.
Well, it probably, in all fairness, it probably wasn't 2 inches at the end of the trench when the first truck went through. But if you have 12 trucks that have crossed it at, I guess, relatively fast speeds.
Yeah. It's, they're going to wiggle loose. I did look up, I think I just looked up steel plate, like road construction steel plate. And it took me to a site. It was pro-techequipment.com. And you can buy these steel plates that are meant for road construction, or it even says, you know, you can lay them over holes. You can cover like the spans of a trench, you know, for this exact purpose. And
how much do they cost?
Oh, I didn't see a price, but I was more concerned with the weight
of how heavy it is. So, yeah. Okay. That was my next question.
And I'm estimating that this plate that John is 4x8 sheet, you know, at 1 inch thick, which I'm guessing that's what we're working with here. They also have 5x10 sheets, so it's maybe that. But just the 4x8 sheet of steel that's 1 inch thick weighs 1,300 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I don't think you're gonna lift it up with that steel pole.
Yeah. The 5x10 sheet, just to show you like how heavy this stuff is. Not that much bigger.
No, but that's already a ton.
Right. So.
Wow. Yeah. Now you got me curious as to how much those cost. You know, because they use them a lot in construction. So, you know, it's probably not that expensive. You know, I don't think it would be hundreds of dollars. Again, depends. You know, when you look it up now, it'll tell you how much it cost, not what it cost 28 years or 29 years ago.
Yeah,
when this movie came out, jury rig this thing, not doing a very good job of it because he can't get it up. You know, with the whole thing.
Mm.
But you'd think that he would give up pretty quickly, seeing how heavy this thing is. You know, especially if it's let's even say that it's only half a ton instead of 1,300 maybe, but you know it makes you wonder how many people how do they lift these things. I guess you have to have they would have
used because they have built-in holes where you could put a strap or chain around it, so they come pre-made with holes. And I see in one of these shots, when he's looking down the tunnel, I think you can see way off in the distance, there's like a bobcat or maybe it's a forklift. You know, that's probably what they would have used. So,
okay. That makes sense. Right. So then he takes his beam and he tries to use, he takes a pole and tries to lift it with the pole. And then it's really great. You see that he's looking down the tunnel and he's got this very strange quizzical look on his face. Yeah. Trying to figure out what it is. And it's great that they make us looking at what he's, you know, because I mean, what we'll find out in a few seconds is he's actually hearing something, you know, but, you know, and what he does, the first thing he does is he pulls out his gun, you know, which isn't really going to help him based on what we know. And, you know, he takes a nice stroll down and then he stops and he looks down the tunnel and he sees something coming towards him, and his mind quickly figures out what it is. I mean, I got to tell you, it's great special effects, especially for a movie in the mid 90s with the way they did it. And he starts walking backwards and then starts to panic and starts running backwards and quickly gets into the truck into Nils's truck and just starts driving backwards. You know, he's not going that fast at this point, but he's still going pretty
right.
He's still moving faster than most people would when they're driving backwards in a tunnel.
Sure.
At least he knows no one's behind
him. With a dump truck full of
gold. That's right. With a dump truck full of gold bullion.
Did you talk whenever it was last week, maybe when the explosion would have gone off, did you talk about when John shuts the door of the truck, that's when you can kind of hear a rumble, and he looks back at the door and like kind of checks it, like, I didn't hit it that hard. Why did it make this big noise? You know, he has like a moment where I think he hears the explosion, but it's like he thinks, wow, that door made a weird, you know, sound. I think that's when the explosion happened. And
that's great, because I didn't catch that. You know, we
okay.
You know, that's the thing that I wanted to talk about, the, you know, the quote unquote elephant in the room, where, you know, I'm shocked that they don't show us this explosion. Yeah. They show us Targo and his men putting the bomb there.
Right.
And then it jumps to the school, you know, and then when it jumps back to John, it's interesting if you see that he notices something.
I think he does. I think he checks the door at the same moment that you hear a low rumble.
Wow. And I'm looking at that now. That's at second 55 in Friday's minute. We didn't catch that. That's great.
Okay. That's how I've always interpreted, like, that's the moment when the explosion happens. But I wish that the explosion happened when he's in this trench and he's looking down the tunnel and he gets that quizzical look. Right. Like, that's when the explosion should happen. Like, otherwise, what tips him off, you know, because he will start walking towards the tunnel. He pulls his gun out, and eventually you start to hear a low rumble of the water.
Correct. So he must, like, hear it better than we do. Yeah.
He hears it.
He's a little closer than we are.
Yeah. I think this moment, like you said, we're missing that elephant in the room. And it would be great if there was a low rumble in the distance, and then maybe the steel plate that he's trying to lift, or the aluminum pole that he's using, maybe he feels the tremor, you know, like it starts shaking just lightly enough that he would then look down the tunnel and go investigate.
Right. It actually reminds me a little bit of Temple of Doom. Where you know, they also break the dam and all the water starts coming, and you know, Indy looks and he sort of hears something and he's not sure, and then he starts running away from there and stuff like that. Obviously, you know, they deal with the same slapstick here, which we'll talk about more tomorrow, about what you do when you're being inundated by a large amount of water.
Yeah,
that's just coming. So one of the things that I wanted to check up was, okay, do you know what the world's record is, the Guinness Book of World's Record, for how fast someone was able to drive in reverse?
Oh, no, that's a good question.
What would be your guess?
Man. I don't think cars are designed to go that fast in reverse. So I think 20, I think, is like the fastest you can kind of go and keep control. But I'm going to say it's probably somewhere like.
Okay. So first of all, I'm going to let you guess again, because I'm going to give you a little bit of information. Mm. This actually, this record was broken on a race course.
Oh, okay. I mean, geez, still, I'll say 80 miles an hour. So
the fastest speed record was what happened this year on the 7th of October, 2023, where I know where you were and you know where I was on that day. we were both in pretty important places at the time. you were at your conference in Indianapolis. And I was in the middle of a frontal attack on my country. Yeah, on October 7th, 2023. And the record that was the record was 171 miles per hour.
Wow.
Going backwards, which is 275 kilometers an hour, which is just astounding to think. Now, I don't know how far.
Yeah.
You know, how long that went for.
Right.
It could be that they just reached that point. But again, if you're on a racetrack and you're able to get up to 171 miles per hour, okay, you've if they usually say, was it 0 to 60 in 30 seconds?
Yeah.
So this must have been for at least 2-3 minutes. That's what I would think. So I don't know. But
yeah,
you know, that's just amazing to think about. You know, the car that was used for this is a Rimac Nevera, it's known as a hypercar.
Okay.
Because it's an electric hypercar that was able to break this record. So, wow, that's it's just amazing thinking about those numbers. You know, that someone was able to even keep control of the car at the time. You know, that shocks me even more. Not just the fact that they did it, but that that the car didn't flip over or anything like that. I mean, this same car a year before or 6 months beforehand broke 23 other performance world records. It broke the record of 0 to 60. It broke the record of 0 to 100, 0 to 200. So there's over 0 to 60 miles per hour, 0 to 100 kilometers, 0 to 200 kilometers, 0 to 400 kilometers, 100 to 200 kilometers, 200 to 300 kilometers an hour, 200 to 250. The fastest to reach to cross 100 kilometers distance wise, it did it in 29 minutes. Did it in 28 minutes. Again, there's a whole bunch of other records that it broke. You know, the fastest quarter mile, the fastest eighth of a mile, the fastest half a mile, the fastest standing mile. You know, it hit a standing mile in 20.59 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah, seriously. But I just find it amazing that it broke 23 records in one day. And then they decided, you know, let's for the fun of it, just go backwards and see what's going to happen there. Yeah, that's just really cool. Again, I'm a little disappointed we don't get to see the explosion itself here. But I can sort of understand the fact that they might want to do it to surprise us.
Yeah.
You know, like we see them put the bomb there. And we're theoretically supposed to have forgotten about it already. You know, even though if we're watching this straight through, it's just a minute later. It's not as if there's that much, but now we're seeing John. So we've forgotten about the fact that they were placing the explosive there. And they also took us for a few seconds, you know, back to the school and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know, they want you to forget what's going on. It would have been nice to see and also to see how it actually works now. But it also brings up the question that I've never even thought about through the course of this. Okay, later on, we have Simon say, I'm not a monster, meaning that, you know.
Right.
Wait a second. As you pointed out, he blew up the department store, okay, with a real bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And he put a real bomb in a park where Charlie was able to find it. Okay, then he put another real bomb in a park with John. So you'd think that some of those might have been if he's not a monster, because put it in a park and you're hoping that it'll be with John. But if the explosion goes off, it's not going to just kill John. It'll kill, you know, it'll kill John, Zeus, and whoever else is around there. So.
Sure. And then there's the one on the subway, that's too. Right. Like that one clearly was meant to go off, because obviously that one is critical. Location-wise,
correct.
To Simon's
plan. And the plan there was to also kill people, you know, to create more chaos and whatever, which, again, surprisingly, no one got killed in that one. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
In the movie, we don't know how many people got killed in the department store. In the script, it has a scene like in The Untouchables. Do you remember the beginning scene in The Untouchables with the little girl in the soda shop that picks up the briefcase and chases after the Nettie? To say to him, you know, you forgot you forgot your briefcase, and then it explodes and kills her. So in the beginning of the script, that happens here. There's these two women that are in a department store, and they say, oh, look, here's a briefcase, and they pick it up and it explodes. You know, so they spared us that. At least that.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else for this minute?
Nothing that can't wait.
Okay. All right. So let's go to the script. So the script is a little more descriptive here, as I mentioned, and it does have a little bit of a dialogue. So, you know, we see Targo is placing the explosive briefcase in the script. It's all C4. They don't have this magical hybrid type of mixture, right? They're just using C4. And, yeah. But then it says, Targo says, he'll be here in minutes. What are we going to do? Simon thinks for a moment. The retaining wall holding back the water from the rest of the aqueduct. He looks at the retaining wall, holding back the rest of the water from the rest of the aqueduct. Blow the wall. And then it has, there's like a short little scene with Zeus driving on the Sawmill River Parkway. It says he's driving up the Sawmill River Parkway. He pulls off to the road and looks at an orange shed on the side of the parkway built out of the ventilation grates to protect the public. It's marked danger, construction below. Zeus pulls back on the parkway following the aqueduct. At the retaining wall, the dump trucks are exiting the tunnel up the construction vehicle exit ramp. Targo finishes rigging the retaining wall with a package of C4 along with Mr. Luck, which is one of his henchmen. They get in the last remaining truck in the tunnel and pull up the exit ramp. Targo's dump truck comes up a ramp to street level, joining the other dump trucks. Targo nods to Simon, who removes a transmitter detonator from his pocket. He presses the button, and the plastique explodes, blowing the retaining wall, releasing the water into the rest of the aqueduct. Simon turns to Targo. I won't underestimate him this time, Mathias. Make sure he's dead. Simon gets in this truck. The convoy of dump trucks pulls out onto the Sawmill River, heading north. Targo motions to Mr. Luck and another man. They walk to the southbound lanes of the Sawmill River Parkway. Targo walks right in the middle of the parkway. An oncoming BMW locks up its brakes, fishtailing to a stop 10 feet from Targo. The driver gets out. Are you out of your f***? The BMW suddenly backs up, terrified. Targo steps past it, a machine gun trained at his head. Mr. Luck gets behind the wheel, the other man next to him. Targo gets in the back with the machine gun. The BMW sprints off. McLean's truck is parked in front of the cable trench in the concrete floor. McLean picks up the ramp that fell into the trench. He stops. He hears a whooshing sound. Perplexed, he looks around. He puts down the ramp and walks several paces ahead. The whooshing gets louder. Ahead, the tunnel bends around a curve. McLean walks around the bend. He stops in his tracks. The overhead lights stretching down the tunnel begin to blink out. Close on McLean. His eyes widen at the sight of a 32-foot high wall of water roaring through the tunnel, coming straight at him. McLean turns and races back to his jump truck. The wall of water is gaining quickly. He gets in the cab. McLean frantically engages the gear. He performs the quickest 5-point turnaround in the history of driving. He floors the dump truck, gunning it down the tunnel the other direction. So, again, I do like the stunt of having him drive backwards. So it sort of bothers me that in the script he doesn't need to do that. But, you know, they fix that in the production itself.
Yeah.
You know, even though it's less realistic, and we'll get more into this tomorrow about how unrealistic this stuff gets. But, you know, for the time being, that's the script. So every Monday we have a segment called the McTiernan Monday. So, Travis, why don't you start off with number 5 and work your way up?
So overall, McTiernan has, I think it was 11 movies. And
that's right. So 11 movies.
At number 5, I put the four of his movies that I know I have seen, but I couldn't, you know, rank them. I couldn't pick number 5. So in number 5, I've got either Hunt for Red October, Medicine Man, Last Action Hero, and 13th Warrior. Like, out of those four, you know, pick one.
No, you pick one.
Then I have to go, I guess, Hunt for Red October, I guess. But that's a movie, like, I saw as a kid that I haven't revisited, but I probably should. And then the rest of them are, like, the same thing. Like, I've seen them once as a kid and never revisited. So it's kind of all a tie for fifth for me. But
okay, we'll give Hunt for Red October that one.
But
point.
Then in number four, sure.
based on that.
Then number 4, I would go Predator. Number 3, The Thomas Crown Affair, because I love that movie. Number 2, excuse me, number 2, I'd say Die Hard. And then in number 1, I would give it to this one, Die Hard with a Vengeance. And then the other three of his that I haven't seen were Nomads, Rollerball, and Basic. So no idea, you know, about those movies.
Okay. Right. I still have Rollerball and Nomads on my list to eventually sit and watch, even though I've been told by everyone that it's just not worth it. But I do have people that have chosen them, so, you know, on their list. Actually, that's not true. Rollerball is not on anyone's list at this point. It's the only movie that has not gotten any points. Nomads has 1 point so far. So, and so does Basic. Both of them have 1 point. Yeah. All right. So, Travis, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Travis Bowe?
Yeah, you can find me on Real Comic Heroes. That's my comic book movie review podcast. So that's been going since 2015. And let's see. We will have just done, we're wrapping up 1999. So we just did Phantom Menace. We did Iron Giant. Mystery Men, The Matrix, and Galaxy Quest. So some.
That's a nice roster.
Yeah, yeah. So those are our recent episodes you can check out.
All right, very cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moveyouroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moveyouroundminute@moveyourob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Marching home again, hurrah, hurrah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hurrah, hurrah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.